Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to live a happy, healthy life. As such, I've set the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine, to provide life guidance and help people connect their emotions with their natural inner state of health. With this radio, and the help of all our guests and callers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lights online. Listen to your favorite teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. Join show host, healer, and founder of Inner Healers in Peru, Susana Stiglitz, while she unravels each topic hand-in-hand with her wise guests. Many people around the world have improved their lives thanks to their sharing through the Inner Healers community. Join us for a joyful experience. Shows are recorded, so you can download each as a podcast to listen on your way to work or whenever needed.
Everybody, welcome to the Inner Healers Radio. Today, we will be talking about the schools of forgiveness and reconciliation. Our very special guest for today is Dr. Eileen Bory. My name is Luciana Stiglitz, and I will be your host for today. Dr. Eileen Bory started in the 80s. She has been on the front lines of forgiveness from the personal to the political. As a political psychologist, she helps rebuild war-torn countries such as Liberia, Nepal, Pakistan, India, Israel, and the occupied territories. Her work focuses on reconciling centuries of old conflict and finding ways to forgive. She understands deep-down psychological issues surrounding conflict and their healing. Besides going to war-torn countries, she leads the charge by training other high-profile people such as diplomats, peacekeepers, and humanitarian organizations. As the Director of Training and Program Development for the IMTD, whose mission is to promote a system-based approach to international peace-building and to transform deep-rooted social conflict through education, conflict resolution, training, and communication, she designs and implements these programs in international peace-building, conflict resolution, trauma recovery, forgiveness, which is our today's topic, and reconciliation. As such, she's part of the Schools of Forgiveness and Reconciliation program, developed for the most violent and conflict-ridden zones of countries like Colombia and Peru. The backbone of this project is the training of motivators, people who are trained to inaugurate these neighborhood schools, which are made up to 10 or 15 people and include a 10-module methodology that takes about 80 hours of work to complete. This chosen person, the motivator, along with the chosen students get together in private homes, classrooms, churches, or any public space they find. They try to replicate the experience that he himself, its motivator, has previously lived through during his training, where the accumulated wisdom of the participants is converted into valuable support for those individuals that have been victims of all sorts of violence. Help me welcome Dr. Eileen Bory. Hello, Eileen.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, dear. Thank you for being with us today. It's a real honor, a very, very big pleasure.
Well, I'm so excited to be back on your show. It's such a wonderful program that you have, and to talk about something that's so close to my heart, which is all the work of forgiveness and the healing of wounds, especially from domestic violence to political violence.
Can you tell us, please, how forgiveness is a way of healing for you, in your experience?
Okay. I first want to just mention a little bit about the schools and then go into the healing process, because one of the things that's so beautiful about the schools of forgiveness is that it does take people through an incredible process which parallels the work of an individual. And so what we have to do individually is it parallels to what we do on a group and in an international level. And there's just one thing I just want to say briefly and then go into your question, is that the Schools for Forgiveness and Reconciliation is a model that was developed in 2001 by Lionel Navarez. And Lionel is the creative force behind this. I guess you could almost call it a movement. And he is from Bogota. And the way he developed this model is that it was based on the experimental designs of different pedagogies of forgiveness and reconciliation, which were developed during the latter half of the 1990s with the assistance of an interdisciplinary team from Harvard. And so he has spent many, many, many years developing this model with many different people. And the experience of the schools for forgiveness started in 60 barrios, neighborhoods of Bogota in 2001. And now, by 2010, the schools have expanded to 40 cities of Colombia and groups and cities in Brazil, in Argentina, in Bolivia, in Chile, in the Dominican Republic, Ecuador, Mexico, Peru. There's a wonderful group of Amayadores in Peru, and I hope they're going to be listening to this because they're such beautiful people. All the Amayadores that I've met are just beautiful, and so I actually want to say hello to all of them. And the other countries like Venezuela, Argentina, Uruguay, they've all have begun this movement based on the work of Lionel Navarez, who's very, very active to this day, trying to really build these cultures of forgiveness and reconciliation. So I owe a huge debt of gratitude, especially to Lionel, who started this work, and who's been so gracious to share all of this to anybody who gets involved. And so I'm wanting to take this to Africa, to English-speaking countries in Africa, and actually replicate what he has done throughout South America. And so I just really wanted to share that so people understand that it's not anything I've developed. This is something which a lot of people have come together under the guidance of Lionel Navarez, and it was Lionel who has done so much work around this, and just we owe him an awful lot. So I just wanted to mention that. And so about your question, how do we forgive and what is the process, I want to share a little bit about what forgiveness is, because part of how we forgive is that we understand what we actually mean by forgiveness, if that's okay.
Sure.
And so what I'd like to do is just, first of all, talk about forgiveness and to start off to say it's okay if you don't want to forgive, that it's very natural to want revenge, and it's okay to feel angry. But I also want to tell everyone that on a very practical level, forgiveness is about lessening our own emotional burdens and healing the pain within our hearts. So the reason why we choose to forgive, it's more for ourselves. It's our inner healing. It's not about someone else. We forgive so hatred and revenge can't rule our hearts. Otherwise, we become just like the person who's harmed us, and we continue that spiral of hate, and we just keep that cycle going forever and ever. And so the important message here is to remember that forgiveness is not about letting someone off the hook. And I want people to be really clear about that. It's about your personal inner healing. It's about your ability, it's looking at your anger and your pain and being willing to look at the different aspects of yourself. So often that we would rather deny. We don't want to see what's underneath our pain, and we don't want to really look at what's underneath our anger, because if we do, it usually means something has to change. But that's a good thing, because that's how we grow. Anyway, so put simply, forgiveness is a voluntary act in which you make a decision to see a situation differently. It's the choice you make by adopting an attitude that lets you let go of your anger and your resentment, and choosing to see the world through understanding and compassion. And that's the hard piece for people, because when we get hurt, right away, you know, we have all these negative things to say about someone, and it's very hard for us to step back and look at what's going on with that person.
So if forgiveness if forgiveness is something so good for us, why do you think it is so difficult for people to forgive?
It's because we don't want to look at our part in a situation. You know, as soon as somebody hurts us in any way, and this is why I was saying earlier, it's natural for us to be angry. It's natural for us to want revenge. We want to automatically, it's a reflex action, to attack back. And we put all the blame on someone else. And in fact, you know, people do things to us, and in fact, it hurts, and they have committed a wrong. But what's so hard for us is to step back and say, yes, this person has done X, Y, and Z, and that really hurts. I need to take responsibility for that and deal with it appropriately. Part of dealing with it appropriately is taking responsibility for how you're feeling, what you're doing, and being able to deal with that and express it. But the other piece is to be able to step back for a moment. In negotiation theory, I talk about when we negotiate and people get really upset, to imagine now that you have gone to the balcony of the first floor of a building and you're looking down and you're watching what's going on between two people. You're able to see what's going on from both people's perspectives. So, for example, let's say you're in an ugly divorce and you've been abused. Of course you want to get out of that relationship. Of course what that person has done is wrong. It's awful, and you've got to protect yourself. And so the smart thing to do is to remove yourself from the situation and do what you need to do to protect yourself. But then the next step, and this is the hard piece, is to say to yourself, what has happened in that person's life that brought him to the place that he is today that created the situation to begin with? That's the hard piece for us. We don't want to see the pain and the anguish and all the distortions that went on before that brought that person to the place they are. It's very hard for us to walk in someone else's shoes. And here's another misperception. Just because you understand why someone has done what they've done, it doesn't mean that you excuse it. It doesn't mean that you have to like it. It doesn't mean that you have to be back in a relationship. It just means that you have gotten another perspective of a situation, and sometimes that perspective is enough to disarm your anger and pain, and that's part of your inner healing. Does that make sense?
Yes. You were talking about abusive relationships. We've been here in the radio, we've been talking about these kinds of relationships during this week. So we've talked about sexual abuse, we've talked about physical abuse, we've talked about psychological abuse. You were saying that you sometimes need to leave this person. Just do people need to forgive before leaving the person, or can that process be done once they've left the person?
That's a very good question, and I think that is kind of addressing another misperception, because so often people think that that person has to be in front of you for you to forgive, and the answer is no, they do not need to be in front of you to forgive, and sometimes it would be foolish to have them in front of you because they are a danger to you. Remember that forgiveness is about your own inner healing. It's your psychological process. It's a process that helps you begin to really work through your anger, work through your guilt, because very often, especially in abusive cases, people feel guilty. They feel like, I must have done something wrong to deserve this. And in fact, you haven't. It's the whole psychological dynamic that was set up that has made you feel that way. And you've got to forgive yourself just for that and recognize that holding on to the guilt that you may have about the situation is a choice too. And so we have to remember that we can choose to hold on to that guilt and continue to beat ourselves up, or we have a choice to let go of that guilt. And the way we let go of that guilt is by saying, I'm going to take responsibility for this now, and I can let go of the rest. It's done. It's over. And so what you have to remember is that because forgiveness is an inner process, you can work through that anger. You can work through the fear. You can work through the guilt. You can work through the understanding of putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. And then you get to a point of saying, okay, this has happened. I've accepted, and I'm going to move on. And in that process of letting go is the forgiveness work, and none of that has to be done face-to-face.
Okay, so what would you tell listeners who might have been sexually abused about forgiveness?
I would tell them that, first of all, it's okay to be angry, and I really want to stress that, because it's horrific to be abused. But as I mentioned earlier, that on a very practical level, what they need to remember is that forgiveness is about their healing process. It's about lessening their emotional pain, and it's the healing of pain in their heart. So they need to share their stories with people who will be supportive, who will listen to them, who will really, really listen, and to hold them in a safe container so they know that, first of all, that the secret is out, that they have an emotional support system, a community of people, be it two or three people, who will be there for them, who will help them. And then through the situation, start looking at, okay, what am I really angry about? And yes, you're angry about the assault, but there could be other things you're angry at, and you might even get to a point of saying, what I'm really angry about is that I know I should have left this person years ago, or whatever comes up for you. And then you say to yourself, and this is how you work with anger. Anger is a messenger. And it tells us that something needs to change. And sometimes it's something within ourselves, and sometimes it's about our outer experience. When you begin to understand that message, you can start empowering yourself. And even if the message is, I've been too nice, I feel so bad about myself that, you know, I got myself in a bad situation, now you can say to yourself, okay, now that I see that, I can change my mind about myself, because today I am doing something positive. I'm going to take action, and I'm going to get the people around me who I need to help me, to support me, to help me do what I need to do. That becomes part of their healing process. And when they begin to feel that, their self-esteem improves, their image of themselves begins to improve, their feelings of self-worth begin to improve, And to remember that you don't have to do this work alone. Get with a friend who really loves you and supports you, or get to a counselor who can help you. But the important thing is to do that inner work, because, as I mentioned, it's not about letting someone off the hook. It's not about letting that person who abused you off the hook. It's about your personal inner healing. And what you may find is that now you have the strength to maybe report it or to do some positive action to stop it. And that's all part of it, because you've come out of denial and you're beginning to regain your own self-worth.
What would you tell our listeners who might have gone through physical abuse situations?
Mm-hmm. It would be the exact same thing. The first thing to always remember is to get out of those situations that you find yourself in. Get to a shelter, get to a friend, get to a family member, get to anyone, because the first thing you need to do is get safe. Take care of yourself, and if it's physical abuse and you need to get to a hospital, do what you need to do to protect yourself and to help yourself. Once you're in a safe environment, make sure that you've got the support system intact so you don't go back to an unsafe situation. And then the process is the same. Feel safe to tell your story. Be able to share it. Get out that anger. It's horrific that someone has done that to you. But then to recognize that you don't want to keep holding on to that anger. You want to be able to work with it constructively. And to remember, to keep reminding yourself that this forgiveness work isn't easy. If it were, everybody would be doing it. But that it's worthwhile, and that it doesn't happen in one day. It's much healthier to say, I am so mad at this person right now, I can't deal with it. Or it's much healthier to say, you know, I can forgive a little, or I can work a little, but I've got a lot more to do. That's okay. People really need to be gentle with themselves and to recognize that whatever is coming up for them is what's coming up for them. There's no right or wrong here. And the important thing is that whatever comes up for you, you have your support system, you have your counselor, you have whoever it is to help you process what's coming up. It's like layers of an onion. You've got one layer, and you work through it, and then you think, oh, this is really great. I've been able to work through this. And then all of a sudden something else pops up, and you say to yourself, I thought I was over that, but now it's coming up again. And that's part of the process. And so that's okay. And go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yesterday we had somebody who said that was continuously being beaten by the guys that studied with him, and that even one time it had happened in front of one of the teachers, and the teacher had done nothing about it. What would you tell both parents and authority figures, like in this case teachers, about this kind of situation?
First of all, you can't ignore it. That's bullying. So as I'm understanding, there were two young boys fighting?
There was one boy who was constantly being beaten by many people.
Uh-huh. So the young boy was being bullied by many people, in a sense.
Bullying, yes.
Is that correct?
And
yeah.
Being beaten as well.
And you see, first of all, authority figures have to step in. You cannot ignore it, because by ignoring it, you're basically saying this is okay behavior, and it is not. And so the authority figures, the teachers right there should have said, this needs to stop. This is not okay. And it doesn't matter, you know, if they say it's this person's fault, it's that person's fault. It's not okay. This is not how you deal with a situation. And you need to talk to the boy who's being beaten and take care of him. And you have to talk to the people who are bullying and doing the beating to find out what is really going on here. And that they need to be held responsible. I don't care if they're even 5 years old. People need to be held responsible for their behaviors. The parents need to know about this. And it needs to be dealt with openly. Otherwise, that behavior is going to continue. And we know that, you know, if you become a victim of a crime, and in this case, this little boy being beaten, down the road, he might become someone who starts beating others. And so you've got to break the cycles of violence, starting with the very youngest in our society.
I've had some parents in my private practice, and sometimes parents tell me I'm not going to be part of that because my child has to learn how to defend himself. What would you tell these kind of parents?
I would tell them that, first of all, they are the role models. And how are the children going to learn to defend themselves if you don't show them appropriate ways to do it? And beating someone up is not an appropriate way to deal with conflict. And I think this is such an important message because when I work abroad and when I'm working with, you know, groups in conflict, let's say who have been enemies, very often what I hear in my training programs is that people say if we knew another way of dealing with conflict, we wouldn't have killed one another. And the reason why they didn't know any other ways of dealing with conflict is right from them growing up, no one taught them any other way. So when parents say, well, you know, my kids have got to fend for themselves, they've got to deal with it, they are not taking responsibility of being good parents. And so what they need to do is find out what's going on, and they need to model for the children the way to deal with it. And the way to deal with it is you bring the parties together and you start talking about it. And you let them know that this is not appropriate. And you find out what has been going on here, and you deal with it. It's not by visiting kids, because what are kids going to do? They're going to go and just try to beat one another up because that's all they see.
Okay, let's move on now to psychological abuse. What would you tell our listeners who might be going through something like this?
With the psychological abuse, and this is really, I think, the most difficult to actually deal with, because when there's psychological abuse, unfortunately, it affects people so deeply that they begin to think of themselves as not being worthy, or they feel guilty that they haven't been able to do something, or they become very fearful. But in spite of all of that, people who are dealing with psychological abuse, they've got to break away, and they've got to get to people who love them and support them. And there are certain things that happen along the way before the psychological abuse gets to be at such a point where you feel trapped. And even when you're trapped, you've got to break away. And so what people need to do is, if you're in a relationship and that person says, stop seeing your friends, stop seeing your family, and your circle starts to become smaller and smaller, that's a real red flag that something is wrong in that relationship. And right there, you've got to say, this is not working. And you've got to remove yourself from that situation. And, you know, there's a whole psychological profile of people who are abusers, especially psychological abusers. And so as soon as that starts to happen, you need to look into that. Because we need to be able to see and be with whomever it is that are loving to us and that are supportive. And so when a person gets to be in such a position where it becomes harder and harder and they don't know how to deal with it, they've got to get to people who will love them and support them and to hear their story and get out of harm's way. And if there are listeners out there who have friends who they suspect are in trouble that they're not seeing and they're suspecting abuse, find a way to reach out to them and get them alone, away from the abuser, to find out what's happening and get them support and help, and don't let them get back into those situations. And that's where I feel that we've all got a responsibility to the people we care about and love, because sometimes what happens is that you get into a relationship and the person, the abuser, says, you can't see this person anymore. And then it gets violent, and so you're afraid to do anything because you're afraid not only of the now psychological violence, but the physical violence. That we've got to help people out of those situations.
What about the people that have the psychological profile of rescuers? The people who will tell you, I'm not leaving him or her because he or her can change. He or her has promised that will change. Or he or she is getting better. What would you tell them? Or maybe they just feel they need to be there because they need to help him or her. What would you tell these listeners?
I would say you need a lot of counseling, and I'm really serious about that because, you know, when you think about it, a healthy person knows how to take care of themselves. They know how to get out of harm's way. They know that by staying in a situation where you're getting hurt, you're also hurting the other person because deep down inside, if I'm the abuser and I start hurting you, and you think you can rescue me, but meanwhile you can't because it's impossible to rescue someone else, and that's something people need to understand, that you cannot change people. Only people themselves will change themselves. You cannot motivate them. You cannot do anything except get them where it kind of hurts. And sometimes leaving someone might be the catalyst that motivates them to get the help they need. And if you're not able to see the abuse and what's happening to you, that means you're in denial about things. And you also need help to see why is it that you're staying in a situation that is hurtful to you, that is unhealthy for you. You've got issues you've got to look at. And usually people, you know, if they're honest with themselves, recognize that they're so needy that they want to be loved, and they feel that here's another person that if they could only help them, they would be loved more. That's something they've got to look at. And that's usually the dynamic, because we are all worthy in our own right. We don't need other people to validate who we are to be loved. We certainly don't need to be in an abusive relationship. And so anybody who thinks they can rescue someone, first of all, you need to understand that you cannot rescue anyone. People have to do their work on their own for themselves and be motivated by themselves. So the premise is wrong. You cannot rescue someone. And if you feel that you need to rescue someone, what you really need to do is rescue yourself. And the only way you can do that is to get help, because you're not seeing or not choosing to see the situation that has kept you trapped. So that's what I would say to people.
Okay, so what would you say is the difference between being helpful, you know, supporting or nurturing, and being a rescuer?
You can be honest with people, and you can tell people, this is what I see, and this is why I feel the way I do. I can, you know, I see that you're behaving in a certain way. And when you do those things, these are the kinds of things that happen. And you may want to look at it because it's affecting our relationship or whatever is going on. You can tell them what you think. You can tell them what you feel. You can tell them what you see. So that's okay. But it's when you think that after telling them 2, 3, 4 times and there's no change that you're going to be able to rescue them, that's where the problem becomes. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, totally, it does. Now, what would you say is the importance of having schools of forgiveness and reconciliation in our society?
What is the importance of forgiveness and reconciliation? Is that what you're asking?
What is the importance of the schools of forgiveness and reconciliation in our society?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, what's so wonderful about the schools is, first of all, let me just tell you a little bit about the model, because the real importance of the schools is that it is able to work with people. And basically, it's a lot of it is a training of trainers. There's a multiplication strategy where people go to the 80-hour workshop, and they, through the 80 hours, have done a lot of their own inner work and their own inner healing, and they've understood why are we violent and how, and to really look at themselves in that way. And then throughout the different modules, and there's 10 modules, how do we begin to change that, and how do we work with our anger, and, you know, this is how we see ourselves, and now we want to see ourselves differently. And they begin to understand the forgiveness process. And ultimately, once they work through their forgiveness process, they begin to understand what's also reconciliation. So now you've got a number of people who have gone through a process, a very beautiful and powerful process. And then you've got, from that group of, let's say, 15 people, maybe two or three people who want to facilitate the process. So they're given all the materials that they were able to use, and they are able to now go into their villages or to their communities or to their organizations and repeat the 80-hour workshop. And so now you've got people who've gone through the process who are now able to continue that process with new groups. And each group constitutes a school of forgiveness. And then all of these groups stay in touch with one another and are connected. And so now what you're doing is you're building a culture based in forgiveness and reconciliation, opposed to a culture that is based in violence. So now you're beginning to have this healing effect throughout the community and throughout, you know, your village and throughout, hopefully, then the nation and then the region. And so now you're beginning to develop these cultures of peace, these cultures of forgiveness, and you're getting people to start thinking differently, because ultimately that's what forgiveness is about. It's about being able to see a situation differently. And so now people have the tools to know how to forgive. They have gone through the process themselves. They are now able to help others. So now you're beginning to teach another way of dealing with conflict. So instead of having the kids now bully one another in schools or beat up people or groups in conflict or people being abusive, now more and more people are doing their own inner healing work, and they're learning other ways of dealing with conflict and pain, which are healing as opposed to creating more violence. And that begins to have a multiplier effect starting right within our families. Because if you've gone through this workshop and now you've worked through your own process and you've done your own inner healing, and now you go home and you see violence in your home, you're going to deal with it differently, and you're going to stop the cycle of violence. And so you've got these wonderful schools of forgiveness and reconciliation that not only help heal the individuals that go through it, they're helping from the smallest individual level to the macro. You're going from the micro to the macro. People are learning how to forgive in their lives, and they're learning as groups how to forgive other groups and how to forgive on a national and in larger groups. And that's why this work is so powerful. That's why I love it.
You mentioned, okay, so initially you mentioned some countries which are well known because of the violence or terrorism or drug dealing issues that they've had in certain regions. If this has been happening, probably there has been psychological abuse and physical abuse and sexual abuse as well. How does this project help these people into forgiveness?
Well, as I mentioned, that more and more people go through this, and so they have a different way of dealing with conflict. So, you know, this program started, the model was developed in 2001. By, I'm going to say, around 2010, probably there have been over 90,000 people who've been trained as facilitators in the schools of forgiveness and reconciliation. And then they have transferred this methodology, by the way, to about 1,500 teachers in, and these are just statistics I'm remembering from Columbia, into 62 schools, 40,000 secondary school students, 21,000 illiterate displaced people. And they've worked with like over 1,000 ex-combats, and these are only statistics I know from 2010. It keeps growing. And so then there are centers of reconciliation that come out of this, and there's projects called, I think, the Network for Youth and Reconciliation. So through this work, you get these centers, and you get more and more people thinking about this and doing this, and that's how it begins to spread. There's a real multiplier effect, and there's some tangible results that happen as a result of the multiplication of these schools. I know that there have been newspaper reports, there have been TV and radio programs that have witnessed some of the oral testimonies and the enthusiasm of the participants and the impact of their lives. Parents and teachers have certified the behavioral and academic improvement of their children at school, and couples in conflict and victims of many kinds of violence, including all the things that you've mentioned. So a lot of this now is being documented, and there are growing numbers of organizations, including religious institutions of different Christian denominations, that are beginning to incorporate the schools of forgiveness and reconciliation methodology into their programs. So you can see as people get involved, it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And I know that, for example, there was some research done, I think it was in Sao Paulo, some of the judges in Rio de Janeiro are discovering the importance of these approaches in offering this kind of thing to minor offenders who have done some things wrong, and when they get exposed to these schools, it changes who they are. And in Colombia, there's this whole network of Youth for Reconciliation, which has been growing. So you can begin to see how all of this has an effect on all kinds of violence that you find throughout society.
Mm-hmm. So we have 7 minutes left for the show. No, I'm sorry, we have 5 minutes left for the show. Is there any final message you would like to share with the listeners?
Well, I think what's really important is for people to understand that if we're going to really make a difference in society, we have to first start with ourselves. And we have to really look within ourselves, and that's really, really the hard piece. Because we're all feeling pain. We all feel that we've been wounded. We have all felt like we're defective goods. Until we recognize that we're not defective goods, that we're all doing the best we can, and that there are ways of dealing with our pain that has a healing effect, we should really look for that. And that's why these schools are such wonderful models, because it gives us a new way of dealing with the conflict and the violence in our lives that break these cycles and that have a healing effect and that protect us. And so I just want people to really understand that forgiveness is for them. On a very pragmatic level, it helps heal their pain. On a more profound level, it is an incredible spiritual discipline that opens us up to such incredible transformations. And that's one thing we really haven't had a chance to talk about. But on the very, very deepest level, as I mentioned, forgiveness is really the science of the heart. It's a discipline of discovering all the ways of being that will extend your love to the world and discard all the ways that don't. And what, on a more profound level, forgiveness is about anchoring a new wisdom within ourselves that's rooted in compassion, not of anger, not of violence. And ultimately, forgiveness, for me, is the highest form of love. And the way that we develop that love within ourselves is really through our struggle in our work with forgiveness. And I think we need to understand that. It's about changing the way we think, which includes embracing our humanity and our spiritual nature. And the humanity and the spiritual nature